All right, here we go. Yeah, I know. It's been a while. Yes, it's been a while since we've actually taped one. Do you remember how to use... Do you remember how to use all the buttons? I certainly have no problems. I just have to talk, and that I do all the time. So I just have to talk into this microphone right here. You're the one with all the wizardry and the masters with all the buttons. So you remember now? Yes, it's been a few weeks. I haven't recorded one. So here we are. We're back in the saddle again, though. Let's go. So let's... Yeah, let's saddle up and gallop home with this one, right? Okay. You ready, Reggie? Good. I'm ready, as always. Three S's. Star, smile, strong. So let's do this one. Yeah, put it in the books. Episode 160. 160. Ready? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Another episode is posted for your binge-worthy podcasting pleasure today. And if you like what you hear... Well, go back to all the previous episodes on WGNplus.com. Go to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the entertainment section, and you'll find all previous 159 episodes, which means, of course, that this is episode 160. Yeah, I'm a little rusty here. It's been a couple of weeks since we actually sat down and recorded one. Last week, for regular podcasting listeners, you'll know that I didn't have a new episode, but on my Facebook page, I did post a podcast that I participated in as a guest, thanks to WGN's Mike Heidemann, who has a podcast called Sound Sessions. He invited me on to talk about my favorite Elton John album, which, based on the title of this podcast, you should know pretty well, right? Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. Yes, you see, this podcast is called Captain Podtastic. It's a takeoff on Captain Fantastic. And so I thought I was really happy with the podcast. We analyzed the album, and we talked about the new movie Rocket Man. We went song by song, and I gave a few little insights as to the recording and what some of the songs meant. We looked at some of the lyrics, and just an overview of the entire album, and I really enjoyed doing it because it is my favorite album, and I love talking about Elton John. And so I thought, why not use that as my podcast for that week? And so I hope you enjoyed that. If you haven't heard it, you can go on my Facebook page, Jim Toronto or Elton Jim, and find it there. I think I posted it on June 10th, so just scroll down and find June 10th, and you'll find it there. Or you can go on WGNplus.com and look up Sound Sessions, and you'll see that episode there with me and Michael Heidemann. So thanks to Michael for inviting me, and we had a great time, a great discussion, really fun, and hopefully the byproduct of that is that you will go out and, if it's not a part of your collection, I hope you'll go out and add Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy to your album collection in any format you please. Vinyl, CD, digital. There may be some A-tracks out there. There may be some cassettes out there. I've got them because I bought them 40 years ago. But it's a fun thing, so check that out. But so now we are back to our official Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and this is episode 160, 160. So welcome back. Thank you for your continued support, and onward and upward. Later in the podcast, we will have Emily Armanetti, and we will be with the popularity of the biopic. And I have to say that I'm certainly very pleased that the Rocket Man film about Elton John's life has in global earnings at the box office has exceeded the $100 million figure. So that is a benchmark, and that certainly makes it a success any way you look at it. You know, it will not make as much money as Bohemian Rhapsody for a very simple reason. At the basic, it's that it was an R-rated, it's an R-rated movie, and Bohemian Rhapsody, I believe, was either PG-13, and so people under the age of 17 could go and watch it without an adult, as opposed to R. So I think that certainly cuts down on the amount of people that may see it at the movie theaters, but hopefully it will live on streaming services and on DVD and on, once again, other formats. Very entertaining movie. It's a good movie. It's a solid movie, whether you're a diehard Elton John fan like me or a casual fan. And if you're just a movie fan, as I said in my review a few weeks ago, it's just a good, entertaining film, I think. So I thought it'd be interesting to talk about, since we've had in the last 6 months, we've had Bohemian Rhapsody about Freddie Mercury and Queen, and now Rocket Man about Elton John. The topic that I'll talk to Emily about is what other rock and roll biopics now may suddenly get greenlit and be made, because now everybody is hungering for rock and roll biopics. So we'll talk about that later in the Pop Culture Club. But right now, you know me, I'm always looking around the world, and some things are just fine, and they make me happy, and I point those out. And then there's those things that rub me the wrong way, and I point those out too. And I understand that on the podcast, maybe I point those out a little more than the nice things. But that's what makes for interesting dialogue and interesting conversation, doesn't it? And I have to say that something struck my eye, if you want to use the term there, in the last couple of weeks that I want to address. Ever since I was a young kid, I've always enjoyed spelling. When I was in school, I loved spelling. I am a writer. One of the things that I have done my entire career, I started out as a journalist. So I've been writing, we all wrote in grammar school and high school, right? But I've been writing professionally even before I was out of college. I had a weekly music column back when I was, 21 years old in a newspaper. So I've been writing professionally. I didn't get paid a lot, but if you get money for anything, that makes you a professional. So I'm counting that. Even though it was barely gas money. So when I look at the my career, I remember that being a young kid, it would have made sense that I liked spelling, because I've been spelling and having to spell correctly for most of my life. Now, yes, in the journalist world, I don't know if there's much journalism going on anymore these days. There used to be things called editors. I don't know if there are any more editors when you look around. Certainly, there's no editors on the internet. Whatever people want to say just goes out there. And supposedly, that's the great part of the internet. Well, that's also responsible for a lot of false news. And yes, everybody talks about Donald Trump saying fake news, but it's easy to just, he uses it so liberally, but the fact is that there is a lot of fake news out there, because there isn't the editing or the screening process on the internet that there was back in the days of newspapers. And even television today is getting very sloppy, because they're trying to chase the internet, which has no rules. But journalism, certainly, in newspapers, there was a rule of checking sources. And there was, and most of these were unwritten rules, but they were written by people who cared. And so, you know, it was basically at least have two sources, two individual sources for every story or every fact that you are printing. So at least you have some basis and some validity to your story. These days, a lot of innuendo and a lot of rumor gets printed out there, and it is dangerous, and it does affect people's careers and people's lives, and we've seen that. But anyway, there used to be a thing called an editor. And so, yes, if you did spell a word wrong and you turned in a story, the editor's job was to find out, it was to find those, in addition to cleaning up your grammar or putting in missing commas or making sure that your facts were checked. Spelling was also part of the deal. Now, of course, we have the technology of spell check, but sometimes that doesn't matter. You could spell T-H-E-R-E correctly, and you meant T-H-E-I-R. So the computer says, no, you spelled there correctly, but you didn't mean to use it in that form. So yes, there always, I believe, is a need for an editor, a human editor. But so as a young kid, I always enjoyed spelling. And I do recall winning a couple spelling tests, you know, in grammar school. I'll never forget. I think in first grade, I do remember winning a spelling test because the goal was to be able to spell correctly the longest word you can bring in and spell correctly. And I guess back in those days, you were able to use proper names because my word was Frankenstein. And for a first grader, that's a pretty long word, right? What do we got? Frankensteiei. And, you know, that's, you know, 11, 12 letters there. It's a pretty big word when, for most part, everybody is spelling cat and dog. So I won the spelling test, even though I couldn't spell it right now. I could spell it in first grade. I can't believe I said that. You know what, folks? And I could have edited that out right now, but that's not me. Once again, that's the charm of an Elton Jim. He comes out and gets on his soapbox and makes a big point, and then he completely dashes that point in 2 seconds by doing the exact opposite. But yes, it's S-T-E-I-N, right? Yeah. Anyway. I wish I could go back and ask my first grade self how to spell Frankenstein. But so I've always enjoyed spelling. As you can see, I was I'm a crack speller. And so I have always enjoyed, especially over the last several years, the televising of the Scripps National Spelling Bee from Washington, D.C., and it's been bopping around on different stations over the last several years, so you really have to try to find it. But it's usually around the last week of May, and over the last couple of years, it's been, for whatever reason, I guess it's a competition, and we'll get to that, because that's my point. And so because it's a competition, in quotes, it's been on ESPN for some reason. Because that's obviously the sports station, so I guess they are considering this a sport. Which brings me to my point. Every year on television, they show several rounds, then they show the final round live, and the new champion speller at the Bee, as it's called by those who participate, and those who follow the Bee. And the winner is crowned, and they get a trophy, and you know, they always show a little clip on the news. Well, you know, this 12-year-old from Concord, Massachusetts, spelled triophorok, you know, or some crazy word, and he won the National Spelling Bee over the weekend, and it's great. Or she, right? Or they, if you're a transgender, I guess that might be the approved pronoun now. He, she, or they. And so it's kind of cool, but I've always watched the several rounds. I just enjoy it. I like to learn new words. I like to see if I can spell the words. Can I have the origin, please? Definition? Are there any other pronunciations? I don't know where this spelling bee was when I was a kid. They say it's been around for 92 years or something. How come St. Bartholomew's School on the northwest side of Chicago was never included in the schools? I would have loved to have gotten involved in the spelling bee. The bee, if you will. Where was all this stuff when I was a kid? They say it was around, but I don't know. They didn't have us, you know, in competitions for the bee. And now, of course, it has become almost a professional endeavor in that it has become so competitive because it has become televised. And certainly it can't hurt in this day of people wanting to boost their resumes in order to get into college. Not the Felicity Huffman way or not the Lori Loughlin way, but the legitimate way. Certainly having National Spelling Bee winner or finalist on your resume along with all your volunteer work and your GPAs and stuff certainly can't hurt. Which, to me, I understand, but also I think a lot of the innocence of the bee, if you will, has been lost. Because before, I think 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, it used to be, hey, you know, Tom, you know, Sally, you're a pretty good speller. Why don't you get into the bee? And you just sort of sat there with whatever knowledge you had, and you tried to spell words. But now it has become an entire cottage industry of training and teaching and studying every word possible in order to enter this contest. To the point that if you watch it closely enough, and if you watch it long enough, as I have, that you will see that there are some words that are ridiculous that you have never would have heard of in your life, you never would have used in your life. But these kids are, I think, literally using the dictionary, and within a year, they are studying and working so hard at this with tutors or with their parents or on their own that they are reading the entire dictionary, and they are studying almost every word in that thing, because you could see that sometimes just by the way they approach the word when they hear it, that they know it already. And there's no way that they ever would have heard this word in natural conversation, in normal conversation. It only came from this intense study, which is fine, and great. They're learning a lot more words, and they're preparing for a competition, which is good. I understand that. But I do think that before, the idea of being a good speller was, were you a good speller based on your natural ability as opposed to pounding it in and spending 12 hours a day for 12 months studying almost every word possible? It is amazing when you think about it. Remember when you were a kid and you got into higher levels of math after you got through multiplication and long division, and then you started algebra and algebra 2 and then trigonometry and geometry and calculus. That was pretty much the way you went through the high school years. And I remember those of us, I was good in math until I was very good in algebra, but then geometry blew my mind, and then trigonometry, algebra 2, trig, and that was it. I was done. Couldn't wrap my brain around that. I don't know what that says about my thinking process, but I was not thinking in that same way, and other people were tuned right in. They were wired differently than I was, no question about that. And but so the common refrain for those of us as we got higher into the math world and it was blowing us away, our crutch was, well, where am I ever going to use this? Now, the funny thing is that came back to bite many of us right in the butt, because I do remember the word algorithm in my advanced math days and saying, when am I ever going to use an algorithm? Well, even if you are a casual user of the internet and just a peripheral observer of technology, you know that algorithms are the things that basically are the building blocks for most of the search engines and all the things that really power the internet. So, you know, for all of us who were baffled and were and just wanted to say, well, I'm not going to use this anyway. Well, that wasn't true. It wound up that you did use that anyway. And if you were able to do that, you can now write code and you make a pretty good buck. You are now in demand. Now, I don't know about with me and my age. I don't know if people my age necessarily would have, but I don't know how. I mean, certainly people older than me, like Steve Jobs and stuff like that, knew what an algorithm was, and they realized what they were going to do with it. So, once again, oops, a big oops. But, yeah, I mean, so I understand the whole idea of studying, and but as I'm saying, there had to be a time when you were maybe in a spelling bee, and someone said, well, spell this word, and you said, when am I ever going to use that word in my life? Well, nowadays, if you're in the B, you will be using that word because every word in the dictionary is apparently up for grabs in the spelling bee. And they try to find difficult words that can trip you up. No, cat is not in there. Sometimes it's a five-letter word, but it's just because of a unique spelling. So somebody gets a five-letter word, someone gets a 15-letter word. But maybe the 15-letter word is phonetically easier to spell than that 5-letter word, which may have some different spellings based on the origin, based on the influence of the word and the different sounds. Remember this when you were growing up? The schwa? Remember schwa? That was another concept I didn't understand. The schwa. When they said, well, it's a schwa. And if you watch the B, they will say the schwa. And basically what the schwa meant was a vowel sound of a letter that was not the actual normal sound of that letter. I never could understand that. So because my teacher would say, well, spell conscience. Well, there's a schwa in there. And I said, there's a schwa. What do you say? Conschwassence then? Well, no, you don't say schwa. Yeah, I was a contrarian at a very young age, folks. This isn't just new. This is decades in the making. the 10,000 hour theory certainly applies. Yeah, I was always kind of questioning things, even back then. But yeah, so you will use those big words someday, kid. So learn them. But as I said, I think while I enjoy watching the bee, I do now feel that it's been a little tainted. Because it feels like there are kids that are now just doing it for a living. I mean, they're 12, 13, 14 years old, and they're not doing anything except going home and studying their spelling words 24 hours a day to get to that B, which, hey, once again, in terms of dedication and devotion and drive and ambition and having a goal, more power to you. That will help you in your life. If it's not just about spelling words, that stick-to-itiveness and that commitment and that drive to excel and to put that time in is what makes, which helps you succeed in life. So there's a good byproduct of it. But the B itself, I feel, the innocence of it, like, hey, let's just spell some words and see who's the best speller. Those days are over. This is now become a professional type of competition. That said, what occurred in the 2019 spelling bee, which just occurred in the last week of May, seems to me, in my view, to go against everything that it stands for or what it purports to stand for, and goes against and does not reward those kids, all of them, not just the finalists, but every kid that is in that competition, who's been studying for multiple hours a day for a year. What happened this year in the Scripps National Spelling Bee was a travesty. So much so that I have been a fan of it for many, many years. I really don't know if I could watch it anymore based on the decisions that were made in this year's Bee. And we were moving toward this because the organization behind it has been exploiting the Bee, putting it on national television. They've got little cut-ins. It's just like the Olympics now. They do these little behind-the-scenes vignettes during the spelling bee about specific spellers and what their life is like, and that whole kind of behind-the-scenes, a closer look like we see in the Olympics, the stories behind the stories. So they have certainly elevated the profile of the National Spelling Bee, made it more entertaining for the mainstream, and certainly made it more attractive for more kids to want to join, and for more parents who are driving their kids to succeed to say, hey, you better get in that Bee. That'll help you get into college or help you succeed. So no more playing outside, no more talking to friends. Study your words. So there has been a new culture that has developed around the spelling bee as it has risen in its popularity over the last several years. Which means, as I said, now we've got basically a major group of just preteen spelling machines. That's what they are. They don't do very much else except spell words. And it's fun to watch it because you'll see how every kid reacts to a word. And one of the common things is that they actually write on their hand, like imaginary writing on their hand. They're seeing the word in their head and they're spelling it out on their hand, or they're spelling it out on their fingers, or they close their eyes, or they stand very still. I mean, it's a very interesting sociological study to see how these kids go about this. And they are amazing spellers. And you sit there and they get it. And there's a word you say, they'll never get this. And boom, they get it. And you just sit back there and go, hey, bravo. Maybe it was worth the 12 hours a day for a year. But if that's the case, if people are spending that much time and that much effort and that much focus and that much determination on what now you are calling a competition, right? It's even on ESPN. I don't know about you folks, and maybe I'm old school, and I certainly in many ways am. But when you have a competition, for the most part, it means you have a winner. A winner. This year at the Bee, these spellers have become so proficient, so robot-like in their knowledge that they went 20 rounds. A lot of times the finals go 4 or 5 rounds. This round at this year's 2019 Spelling Bee went 20 rounds, and after 20 rounds, there were still not 1 and 2, 3 kids just battling it out. There were 8. 8 spellers left after 20 rounds of the finals, and how many other rounds over the last several days of the event, and how many rounds they were in from when they had local and regional competitions. But they got to the finals and they went to 20 rounds, and there were still 8 kids standing. Very impressive. Certainly a result of spelling now becoming almost like a professional sport. But let's remember, if you're going to treat it like a professional sport, then it has to have a winner. Well, after 20 rounds and 4 hours of spelling, the powers that be at the Scripps National Spelling Bee came up with some kind of an arbitrary decision and said, well, it's been at the 17th round. They said, we're going to go up to the 20th round. And if everybody, and in that 20th round, everybody here, if you're still around in that 20th round and you spell that word, you will be crowned a champion. So we could have one champion after the 20th round if the seven other people miss it, or we could have eight. If you all get it right, you will all be co-champions because their view on this, their rationalization for their decision was, well, it's been 4 hours. There's been a lot of spelling. You kids are obviously great spellers. And secondly, well, we're running out of words that may challenge you. 3, 2, 1. Cop out. No. This is what happens when you are either bought into or raised into this ridiculous, everyone gets a trophy type of philosophy. No. Competition is at the forefront of this country. It is what we were founded on. We became free because of a competition called the Revolutionary War. And there's one winner. We didn't call a tie. So at any competition, any championship, there is one winner. And yes, sometimes it takes past the prescribed time. We have seen championships in every sporting event, and once again, if you're going to put this on ESPN and call it a competition and actually call it a quasi sport, then you have to play by those rules. And so, yes, we have seen World Series Game 7s go into extra innings. We have seen NBA championships go into overtime. We have seen Stanley Cup Finals go into overtime. Every sport goes, we've seen soccer go into overtime in the championships. That's how you determine a winner. And yes, the length of it is part of your training. That is part of the stamina that you have. Yes, in a baseball game, if it goes 20 innings, the team that has not used its pitchers correctly or used up all its pitchers and have to bring in the first baseman to pitch and gives it the winning run, well, that's what happens. We just don't throw up our hands and say, well, in a baseball game, in Game 7 of the World Series, well, you know, we're going to play till 20 innings. It's the 17th inning now. This game is going pretty long, and it just doesn't seem like anybody's going to score any runs. So we're going to go to the 20th inning, and if nobody scores by the 20th inning, then you're both champions. Everybody's a champion. Everybody gets a trophy. No, that's not how we do it. The length of it plays into it. If you're a spelling bee kid, part of your training is not just the ability to spell words, but to spell words under pressure, under stress, and yes, for hours and hours and hours. And if you thought it was too stressful for a 12 or 13-year-old kid, then you say, you know what? We're stopping at round 20, and we're coming back tomorrow when you're going to be fresh, and we're finishing this until we get a winner. And if it takes all day the next day, then we'll come back the next day. But we have to have a winner. We don't just call arbitrarily, we're going to go 20 rounds. Why 20? Why not 25? Where did that come from? Where did 20 come from? This is all arbitrary. You've created a competition. You've told me the rules. You made me study for a year for 12 hours. You're not doing me any favors by making me co-champ. If I was one of those kids, I'd be mad as hell. No, I don't want to be a co-champ of these other eight. I want to beat them. I've been studying for 12 hours a day for 12 months or for 3 years. If they can't handle the heat, get out of the kitchen. Let them spell the word wrong. Let them collapse on stage. That's part of competition. If you're in a sport, if you're in a competition, it's not just your ability to hit the ball or make a basket or score a goal. It's also your ability to physically and mentally be able to stay up to that challenge and do that for as long as that game goes on until it's over. And the Scripps National Spelling Bee bought into this. Everybody gets a trophy. Everybody's a winner. Oh, you guys did so well. No, that's not a competition. And so that made me very upset to the point where I don't think I'm going to even watch it anymore. Because in my mind, the kids didn't wimp out. The adults did. Oh, well, everybody gets a trophy. We'll have, so now there were eight winners this year. Eight winners. They all came out and they brought one trophy and they all touched the trophy. Wow, that's fun. And now what happens next year? They have opened this up. Now it's Dodge City. There's no rules anymore. They've just proven that they can circumvent the rules, make their own rules. What if we get to the 20th round next year and there's 15? Now we're going to have 15 winners. Will we ever have a single winner anymore? Because these overprotective people are worried. As I said, okay, it's been 4 hours. It's a long time. These are preteens. I get it. Then you say we are suspending it. We're coming back tomorrow. Do you think any of those parents would have said, well, I have to leave tomorrow? No, they would have found a way for their kid to be there the next day. Awful, awful, disgraceful decision by the people who head up the Scripps National Spelling Bee. To the point, they have diluted it. They have taken the true spirit of competition out of it. They have been unfair to those kids who they think they're protecting. These kids don't need protection, okay? They're there to compete. They're working their butts off for a year or more, and they want to win. And they wound up not winning by no fault of their own. They did what they were supposed to do. They followed the rules. They kept spelling words correctly. So why did they get penalized? Oh, well, we don't know if we can have words that are going to challenge you. Well, let's find out if you have some words that will challenge them. Oh, well, we don't think this team's going to score any more runs in the game in the next inning. We're just going to call it off after two overtimes because we don't think that the football team is going to score another touchdown or a field goal. We don't think that the basketball team is going to score any more goals or any more baskets. We don't think that what does that mean? Someone will score. Someone will get tired. Someone will make a mistake. Another team will win. And that is what is called competition. And that is what makes a true winner. Not this BS with, we're going to have eight winners. What's going to happen next year? Whew. I know you're saying, Jim, it's only a spelling bee. Relax. Yes. But it is a symptom once again of what we're doing. We are eliminating the competitive spirit that made this country great. And that makes individual people great, which makes us strive and do things that you don't think you can do. The goal is to go past your boundaries, to go past what you think you can do. That's what aspiration is. That's how you do great things. That's how we got to the moon. Oh, well, we don't have to get to the moon. We put a rocket, we went around the earth. That's enough. No, it's not enough. Well, we don't think you're going to spell anymore. We can't. Yes, you can. Don't worry. You know what? Some kid may have missed cat in the 50th round. He or she may have been so tired that they couldn't even spell cat anymore. And you know what? Then you lose because that's part of your training. Not just spelling your words, but handling the stress, handling the pressure, handling the physical and the mental. That goes into success in life. Stop coddling these kids. You're not doing them any favors because now you got eight champions and who cares about that? National Spelling Bee. You screwed up. And you lost a major fan. I'm not watching it anymore. And I feel sorry for those kids who are studying because now they don't even know if they can be the champion anymore because some adults who are overprotective helicopter judges decided, well, let's just have eight co-champions. It's been a long day. They're tired. They haven't had a snack. Come on. Competition is competition. There's one winner and there's a bunch of losers. And the people that lost, that will make them, if they would have let this go on, that's what inspires you to do better next time. That's what we're losing to. Losing has a lesson as well. Winning is great, but losing is the great motivator just as much as winning again is. Teams that win want a three-peat, and teams that lose, they want to beat the champion. That's competition. That's how we continue to strive and achieve instead of just being in the status quo, everybody getting a trophy. Shame on you, National Spelling Bee. S-H-A-M-E. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. I hope you enjoyed episode number 160. Earlier in the podcast, I mentioned we were going to have Emily Arminetti on with us. Sadly, there were a few technical glitches. I got a new computer, so I'm working out the bugs. But we love Emily, and hopefully we'll have those bugs worked out by next time. And we will be talking with Emily in the Pop Culture Club. Until then, thank you for downloading, scrolling, clicking, or whatever it is that you do to find us on a regular basis. Your loyalty is much appreciated. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.